after him, trying to stop the bleeding. Jeb blacked out. Chapter 12. Indestructible. 12 minutes, 47 seconds remaining until safe zone expires. Jessica Style. Jessica woke up with a start and winced in pain. Her left eye was swollen shut and her entire body ached to hell. Fresh gashes covered every inch of her body where razor-sharp claws had shredded her fancy armor, treating it more like a gentle suggestion than enchanted steel. To say nothing about the bruising from all the wounds the chainmail did stop. The last thing she remembered, she and the remaining people had formed into a tight knot, gradually retreating from the world tortoise while under constant assault. People were dropping like flies and, fighting in the sky, she had a better view of it than others. She didn't see where Jeb had gone, though. The telekinetic mist user had disappeared somewhere in the middle of the fight, just after everything went to hell. I'll kill Ron myself if I see him again. Despite having a body above 30, gradually fatigue had set in, and she'd gotten winged by an attack. That slowed her down, allowing another attack to hit, and another, sending her into a death spiral there was no recovering from. The very last thing she recalled, she was being tossed around like a hacky sack between the monsters, her vision shrinking into a narrow tunnel as she lost consciousness. Then, a sudden jerking sensation in her stomach, like she was on a roller coaster going up and then sideways at terrific speeds. Which brought her here. Jessica scanned the environment with her good eye. Even without the people, she recognized it easily. This was the safe zone where they'd started the ill-fated attempt on the world tortoise. There was a fire going, and sitting around it were Eddie and his 7 bootlicks. None of them seemed particularly wounded. Jessica scanned the safe zone, but she didn't see anyone else. The pregnant girl should be here, shouldn't she? Jess thought, frowning. The ready-to-pop teenager was nowhere to be seen. Jess tried to lean forward, but pressure on her wrists and neck brought her up short. What the? Jessica glanced up at her wrists, which were bound with thick rope to the large tree at the center of the clearing. Around her neck, she could feel the chill of steel. Her good eye narrowed. Someone's about to die.
Oh, you're up!
Called a voice from the fire, and all conversation stopped. The 8 men stood up and sauntered over to her, not even bothering to hide their leering.
Good morning, princess,
Eddie said, bowing to her with a flourish.
You seem like you were in a bad spot there when we arrived, so we did you a favor and passed you up.
Jessica didn't say anything.
I saved you, but I couldn't help but notice you spend a lot of time hanging around that cripple, so we put the slave collar Ryan found on you, just so you didn't cause a ruckus.
Eddie chuckled, putting his thumbs in his belt loops.
Don't try anything. That fashion accessory there makes it impossible to use any abilities whatsoever unless your owner says otherwise. And whoever supplies it missed is your owner. Kinda makes me wish I'd put a few points into it myself. I'll have to put that on my to-do list. It's irritating letting Ryan hold your leash.
Jessica didn't say anything.
Anyway, just because you're pretty doesn't mean we're gonna take it easy on you,
Eddie said, squatting down in front of her.
You've got the body for some real wet work if you get my drift,
he said, setting a hand on her leg, making the hairs on the back of her neck stand straight up. Jessica didn't say anything. Like a petulant bully who wasn't getting the reaction he wanted, Eddie pouted.
Hey, say something!
Jessica didn't say anything.
Say something!
Eddie roared inches away from her, striking her across the face, filling her mouth with the taste of blood. Jessica didn't say anything, simply meeting his gaze.
God damn it!
Eddie said, walking over to one of the men, a guy whose armor and weapons were lower quality and more patchwork than the rest of them. He grabbed the guy roughly by the collar, dragged him over, and practically shoved him at Jessica like a tool.
Make her say something!
So that's Ryan.
Say something.
the man said, and Jessica felt the absolute need in that moment to say something, like an itch that would only grow in strength until it washed away all of her reason. Well, if I have to say something. Jessica angled her finger. Pip 7. Ryan's brows furrowed an instant before a hole opened up in between them. Jebediah Trapper.
Ding! You have gained a level. You are now level 34.
Jeb snorted awake and immediately regretted it. His head pounded like a marching band and his body felt like a used condom, stretched out, used up, and deflated. He patted his chest and came away with something sticky on his hand, also covered in mysterious fluids.
Ugh!
Jeb groaned, blinking his eyes open. Everything was dark and something was weighing down on him. I didn't go blind, did I? That would really fucking seal the deal right there. After a moment of looking around with his eyes, he spotted a glimmer of light to his left. But first, I gotta get whatever this is off of me. Jeb levered the object off of himself, the glimmering light redoubling as he did so. Finally, he spilled out into the open, gratefully gasping in fresh air as his eyes adjusted to starlight. It was a massacre. For every human dead, there were dozens of monster corpses. But there were thousands of monster corpses, stretching out in every direction. Dotted here and there was a familiar face, frozen in the expression of their death. Behind him, he spotted the corpse of the massive bear-like creature that must have collapsed on him while he was unconscious. He'd been buried under its paw. Jeb tried to stand, toppling to the ground when his splintered peg leg collapsed out from under him.
Mother!
Jeb choked off the rest of the curse. He had no idea if there were more monsters nearby. He crawled back to the giant behemoth he had been partially buried under and began fishing around underneath it. Score, Jeb thought, snagging the vivicant cane and yanking it out, leaning on it as a spare leg as he pushed himself up.
Vivicant cane, consumable item. Carried as a supplementary item by the vaunted healers of Mesticos. These canes allowed the master healers to handle emergencies when circumstances would otherwise prevent them from being able to help, maintaining their vaunted success rate even in the most adverse conditions, along with their priceless prestige. Channel mist through this valuable cane to heal wounds and remove fatigue in an area of effect. Effect is proportional to mist spent. 1 of 4 uses remaining.
3 uses? Jeb thought, inspecting the cane. He'd put mystic triggers on it to go off if he sustained major organ damage, i.e. getting stabbed in the liver, extreme blood loss, heart failure, and brain damage. I know major organ damage triggered, and probably the blood loss triggered as well. So what was 3? Curiously, Jeb reached his hand up to his scalp and found it absolutely caked with drying blood. Did something crush my skull while I was unconscious? Jeb thought, a shiver going down his spine. The thought that his brain had been scrambled and rearranged was eerie. Maybe the magic cured my PTSD while it was in there. Jeb was an optimist. He always liked to view his skull as half full. Is there anyone alive? He thought to himself, scanning the massacre. Some of the tougher people like Freeman might have escaped to the
safe zone,
Jeb thought, turning toward the distant camp. All his ejector seats were designed to drop their payloads off at the safe zone, and that was exactly where Eddie and his goons were going last he saw them. I need to get there before they kill Ron. If he had a read on Eddie, and it wasn't hard, the man wouldn't allow anyone in his little kingdom that might challenge him for top dog. That included Jeb, Ron, Brett, Jessica, almost all of them except maybe Amanda. She might have higher stats than her level, but she's not a fighter. She probably ranks somewhere just underneath Eddie. Jeb wrapped himself in telekinetic force and shot into the sky, angling toward the safe zone, force sliding by underneath him. It only took him a minute to get there, but he was almost too late. From the sky, he could make out several figures locked in combat, dimly lit by the single campfire. One of the figures was smaller than the others, more slender and grievously wounded, clutching a snapped-off spearhead embedded in their stomach. Jess. He tore through the air and landed on the ground with a whoomp, drawing the attention of the combatants to himself. Jessica took their distraction as an opportunity to tear the spearhead out of her stomach, flick her closer, and stab the closest guy in the neck, sending him flailing to the ground. She looked a bit like she'd been through a garbage disposal, covered with minor cuts and bruises, her armor and clothes nowhere to be seen. Jeb scanned the scene. Including the last one, she'd taken out three of Eddie's group, leaving five angry men facing her down.
God damn it!
Eddie shouted.
Chris, get a hand on that collar, or I'll tear your damn arms off,
he said, standing between Jeb and his teammate. Chris, he assumed, lunged for Jess with a longsword. He rushed forward and delivered a vicious strike against her improvised weapon, knocking it out of her hand. Chris took a hand off his blade and lunged for a metal collar around Jess's neck. She caught his hand with her own, stepping in close to his chest to prevent him from swinging his sword at her. Pip 9, she said, her finger pointed at his center of mass. Chris tried to dodge, but the telekinetic bullet tore a hole through his side. In his shock, Jessica wrenched the sword out of the man's hand and executed him with it. Now it was just Eddie and three others left. Maybe I wasn't needed, Jeb thought. Jess was winded, though, and one hand was occupied staunching a trickling puncture wound on her stomach. She wasn't looking great.
I thought you were dead,
Eddie said, glaring at him.
Amanda was nowhere near you. You should have died in seconds.
Yeah, well, shit happens, Jeb said with a shrug.
This time, I'm gonna cut your fucking head off,
Eddie said, unslinging Razorback from his waist.
See if that sticks.
You sure you want to try that? Jeb asked, pointing. You're running out of backup. The three remaining lackeys were hesitating to approach Jessica, glancing between her and the four corpses she'd made. Eddie glanced over his shoulder and snarled.
Forget about the collar, just kill her.
The scar's four to nothing,
Jessica said, leveling her stolen sword at them.
You're welcome to try.
She was probably bluffing, but there were four corpses scattered around the clearing. So these nameless lackeys had to decide whether they were more afraid of Eddie or Jessica.
Fuck this,
one of them said, turning and breaking into a sprint. The other two glanced at Jeb and followed a breath later.
You bitches, out!
Eddie was cut off as Jessica jumped him, gliding across the ground despite her wound and bringing her stolen sword down at his face. Eddie blocked it with his forearm. The sword didn't even sink into his skin, halting harmlessly right at the boundary of causing damage. He heaved Razorback forward, the sword glowing with power as he aimed to cut Jessica in half. Jessica hopped over the strike, her body weightless. The swing sent a shockwave of power sailing out into the distance, causing the grass of the safe zone to ripple. Hovering in front of him, Jessica took the opportunity to angle her sword off his wrist and aim a thrust at his face. The sword came to a dead stop against the man's forehead, and Eddie grinned. Using the free hand her sword was sliding against, he slapped the blade. There was a little burst of light and force, and Jessica's sword was snapped in half, sending shrapnel off to the side of the combatants. The hell is his class skill? Jeb thought, sending his mist out and sliding a dagger out of one of the corpse's sheaths, along with a nearby sword. Some kind of impenetrable skin, maybe? How am I supposed to beat that? Jeb sent his control blades to interfere with Eddie's follow-up kill shot, aiming for his eyes to make him flinch and getting in the way of his sword arm. Eddie flinched, but the dagger against his eye did nothing, and the sword aiming to cut deep into his arm merely restrained it. What the hell? Jessica took the opportunity to kick off of Eddie, sailing through the air toward Jeb. Normally, when you've got a guy with impenetrable skin, you go for the eyes, but that logic doesn't seem to follow here. Maybe I can goad him into revealing something stupid.
You think you've got a chance?
Jeb asked, raising a brow as he spun his blade through the air, making an ominous whirring sound.
I'm a telekinetic combatant.
My class skill lets me manipulate tons of weapons with my mind at once. I can kill you where you stand. Eddie gave him a pitying look and snorted.
Ha! I'm a reckoner. My class skill lets me absorb any attack's force and add it to my own. It doesn't matter what you're holding the weapon with, and it don't matter how many there are. You can't hurt me. You get it now? As far as you two are concerned, I'm indestructible.
Jeb met Jessica's gaze and they shared a look. Wow, this guy is dumb. Jeb dropped the two blades and created two new strands of mist, one wrapped around Eddie's torso and lifted him off the ground. Eddie, divorced from the ground, was unable to find purchase on anything, flailing wildly like an angry toddler being hoisted by his parents.
Hey, what the f-
The other strand of mist hardened a golf ball-sized chunk of air and shoved into Eddie's trachea, bringing blessed silence as the bruiser immediately began to suffocate. So, Jeb asked, glancing at Jessica, what do you want to do after this? I was thinking, Jessica said, reaching down and tugging a man's belt off before cinching it around her oozing stomach wound. I'd go hunt down Ron and get some payback.
Nah, I'm pretty sure that all happened because these guys blindsided Ron, and that caused his zombies to go feral.
Oh? Jessica asked.
Well, it fit the scenario. I suppose Ron could have backstabbed as well as these guys, but I think it's unlikely. He was nowhere to be seen in the ejector seat's trigger when the bearer is knocked out or gravely wounded. So my money is on Eddie's boys knocking out or killing Ron.
I can see how that might have happened, Jessica said with a nod. We'll have to make sure, though.
Turning red, Eddie threw Razorback at Jeb in a desperate bid to be released from the chokehold. Jessica plucked her sword out of the air like a magician, causing Eddie's eyes to bulge. She winced as the movement strained her wound again. Is that stab wound life-threatening? Jeb asked, wiggling his cane to catch her attention.
Nah, save it for an emergency. It's my turn to grin and bear it.
They watched the man slowly suffocate for a couple minutes, his struggles growing more and more intense, tearing at his own skin to try and free himself from the telekinetic lift. This feels awkward, Jeb said into the silence.
I think they left some booze behind, Jessica said with a shrug. We could play a drinking game. He's got enough body that it'll take half an hour to actually suffocate to death.
Jeb pursed his lips, meeting Eddie's bloodshot gaze. Yeah, I'm down for that, he said, hopping over to the fire and joining Jessica where they could both keep an eye on their enemy and keep their feet toasty warm.
Every time he scratches his throat, we drink, Jessica said, handing him some of the booze.
He had no idea where Eddie's goons had gotten it, but it was a welcome distraction from what was essentially slow, calculated murder. It didn't even have the in-the-moment desperation to it. Just a gut-wrenching sense of wrong. Eddie had long since passed out when they heard a woman's voice from the edge of the clearing.
What are you doing?
Amanda called, rushing out from the woods. The healer's armor was torn to shreds, but she herself looked fine. Likely healed herself. From the looks of it, she'd taken quite the beating. Suffocating Eddie to death so he doesn't try to kill us anymore? Jeb said with a shrug. Jessica nodded, expression icy.
Well, stop, Amanda said, her hands on her full hips. You can't just kill people. All life is sacred, and everyone deserves a second chance.
Where were you when I was 30? Jeb muttered. To be fair, she was just starting college when he was discharged.
You're not seriously considering it, are you? Jessica said. He tried to kill us. We leave him alive, he'll try again.
If you don't let him go right now,
Amanda said, putting up her dukes,
I'll fight you.
All right, Jeb said, putting his hands up. I'll let him go. If you and Brett join my group. The healer gave him a squinty look.
We'll talk about it.
That's all I can really ask for, Jeb said, hopping to his foot and hobbling over to Eddie, checking his pulse.
It thudded away under his fingertips.
Still strong as a horse, huh? Body must be outstanding. That's like dolphin-level breath-holding.
Mystic Trigger.
He's still alive,
Jeb said, backing away before freeing Eddie from his hold. The Reckoner folded to the ground and gave a sharp inhale, but otherwise didn't move.
We should get out of here before he wakes up. Dude could punch a hole through my sternum.
Ignoring him, Amanda went up and checked Eddie's pulse herself. All the while, Jeb was biting holes in his pants, waiting for Eddie to come alive and use her as a hostage. Thankfully, that didn't happen.
All right, let's get moving, Amanda said, rising to face them. Ron and Brad are farther northeast.
They survived too?
Jeb asked, picking up his duffel bag and allowing Amanda to lead the way.
Could I get a heal?
Jessica asked with a wince.
Oh, of course,
Amanda said, tapping Jessica on the shoulder, a bolt of concentrated mist arcing out and penetrating her body. Jessica gave a shiver and unbelted her stomach, tossing aside the blood-crusted belt. She gave Eddie a long look before glancing back at Jeb.
It'll be fine,
Jeb said, drawing his fingers across his neck while Amanda's back was turned.
He won't bother us again.
I'll hold you to that,
Jess said.
Yeah, Ron, Brett, and I met up here. I got sideswiped by something and woke up to Ron splashing water on my face. A lump on the side of his head, big as an egg.
Called it, Jeb said.
Then Brett fell out of the sky, covered in blood. I thought my heart was going to stop.
She glanced over her shoulder, looking Jeb up and down speculatively.
That was your good luck charm, wasn't it?
Jeb shrugged.
Anyway, we didn't think this safe zone would be safe for long, so we put as much distance as we could between ourselves and the boss.
Alert! Safe zones have expired. Easy zone automatically closed. 0 of 84,000 normal zones active. Normal closed. 113 of 10,000 hard zones active. 100 of 100 impossible zones active. The hard tutorial enters its second phase. The impossible tutorial enters its second phase.
Well, that's fucking ominous, Jeb muttered, glancing over his shoulder at the tortoise that dominated the horizon, blocking the fading glow of the sun. The stars above it flickered as tens of thousands of monsters streamed out of the creature's shell, drifting up and settling down into the forest beneath it. Their numbers were endless.
I think we should haul ass, Jeb said, picking himself up.
Amanda and Jess nodded and started running like the wind, Jeb flying along behind them.
Eddie.
Boss?
Eddie's eyes flew open and he sucked in a sweet lungful of air, groaning as he sat up and held his hand to his throbbing head. Throb, throb. It felt like someone was beating on the inside of his skull with a hammer.
Motherfucker,
Eddie muttered, glancing up. The three traitors were standing there looking at him nervously. They'd returned in a tremendous act of bravery considering what he was going to do to them for abandoning him.
No, wait. They're the only ones left.
Eddie reined in his impulse to immediately punish them. They had the advantage of being some of the last convenient toys left, and their value was increased by scarcity.
You okay, boss?
Richard asked, offering him a hand.
I'm fine,
Eddie said, ignoring the hand as he pushed himself to his feet.
That fucking bitch.
The little tease had killed 4 of his men, and the other one. Eddie felt an unfamiliar thrill of fear.
Almost died. That fucking cripple almost killed me.
Apparently, Jeb was too stupid to know you have to choke someone out for several minutes after they pass out if you want to kill them.
He's not going to get a chance to regret it,
Eddie thought, gritting his teeth. That telekinetic combatant wasn't going to catch him with his pants down again. Very much the opposite.
He's got to sleep sometime. I'm going to find him. I'm going to figure out when he sleeps, then I'm going to crush his skull into paste.
Eddie's mood turned marginally brighter. Then I'll be able to relax again. Once Jeb was dead, he'd be back on top, and everything would be right with the world.
The safe zone's expired, boss, Harry said.
So that's why you came crawling back to me, huh? Eddie said, sneering. Safety in numbers, Tom said, nodding, flinching away from Eddie in a way that was deeply satisfying. All right, then grab some weapons, Eddie said, motioning to the corpses strewn around the safe zone. Because we're going hunting. I swear I'm gonna kill that bastard, Eddie said, imagining that sweet moment he turned the bastard's brain to paste and put that slut.
Tom Brashears, level 21, pitcher.
I swear I'm gonna kill that bastard,
Eddie said, a malicious smile spreading across his face. Then Eddie's head exploded, covering the three onlookers in bits of gore. The headless corpse fountained blood into the air for a surreal moment, still standing in front of them like nothing was wrong. A couple seconds later, it slumped to the ground. Stunned silence reigned.
I'm not with him!
Tom said, looking up at the sky and pleading to whatever wrathful deity just smote Eddie. Jebediah Trapper.
You have gained a level. You are now level 35.
And boom goes the dynamite, Jeb thought as he got a level notification mid-flight, dropping his points into mist.
Jebediah Trapper, Mystic Trapsmith, level 35, body 16, mist 63 plus 2, nerve 21 plus 3. Abilities, Mystic Trigger.
Chapter 13. Happiness Tastes Like Hippie. There was a wrenching squeal from the side of the camp, drawing everyone's attention. Jessica was unclasping a piece of torn steel from her neck, scowling down at it.
What's that? Jeb asked.
Some kind of magical control collar. Eddie was planning on using it on me, but he didn't have the mist for it.
What is he, some kind of incel?
Brett demanded, scowling. Ron snorted.
Can I see it?
Jeb asked. All eyes turned to him, some pitying, some cold. Jeb held up a hand.
I swear I will not use it as is. I just want to take it apart and see how it ticks.
Jessica watched him with calculating eyes for a moment longer.
Knock yourself out, she said, tossing him the warped collar.
We're gonna have to find you some new armor, Amanda said. You left your own stuff behind at the camp.
I didn't leave it behind, Jess answered. They cut it off of me.
Amanda pressed her lips together in consternation.
Sorry. Brett and I lost most of our stash when... We'll get you something to wear, even if we've got to make it ourselves.
Jessica blinked a couple times, her eyebrows rising as if she'd had an epiphany.
That's not a bad idea.
She leaned up against a tree and closed her eyes, adopting a meditative posture.
You guys get some sleep, Jeb said, getting their attention. Ron and I got the night shift.
Things could go very bad very quickly at night, which is why the people with the most area of control were tasked with night watch. The others began settling down into a tight knot around the tiny campfire, which was composed of Jeb's firefly spinning in a lazy cyclone, exuding a large amount of heat relative to their light. The absolutely silent, ever-watchful wall of zombies surrounding them was hecka unnerving, but the corpses prevented the light of the fire from spilling out into the forest and attracting the new wave of monsters flooding into the woods. Jeb studied the collar in the dim light. It was pure steel on the sides, but the center had a little round decoration approximately the size of a silver dollar. Turning it this way and that, Jeb noticed a proprietary screw head on the back. Out in the middle of the wilderness, it would have been a hopeless proposition to try and open it, but Jeb had long since graduated beyond needing a screwdriver. He grabbed the screw directly with a bit of mist and spun it. A moment later, the back of the circular center popped off, revealing its guts.
Oh, interesting.
Processed control lens, very small.
The control ends as a mixed blessing that coalesces in exceptionally abusive households and occasionally dungeons. It is a uniquely valuable ingredient in any wizard's toolkit, as it allows a misuser to control the effect of another lens beyond its initial manifestation. Extremely valuable to mist craftsmen, combat wizards, and law enforcement. However, the control lens is most commonly found in slave callers. Due to their rarity, they constitute half of the value of the callers they reside in. A single slave caller is worth more than a commoner earns in a decade. This fact has led to some misguided parents being unreasonably strict with their children in the hopes that a lens will coalesce and relieve their financial woes. But results are often poor. Jip turned the rigid piece of leather in the shape of a lens back and forth in his hands. "Oh, come on," he muttered. "Owning the disintegrator is prohibited by law, but the obvious human rights violation isn't?" The lens was beating with a phantasmal liquid, dripping onto Jeb's hands, where it vanished after a moment. Jeb licked the lens. Sweat and tears, he thought as the taste vanished from his tongue. Jeb was starting to get a feel for the society they were being integrated with, and it wasn't all good. Well, on the upside, if these exist, then surely a lens of good vibes will find its way to me one of these days. I should see what I can find at music festivals. Happiness probably tastes like unshaved armpits.
"What you got?"
Ron asked, sitting next to him. Jeb wordlessly handed the lens over as he studied the rest of the guts. There were a few more components buried just behind the lens. A tiny mist regulator, along with something that looked suspiciously like a chip, with several different pinholes for mist to travel through, called a variable behavior inhibitor.
"Oh, interesting,"
Ron said, turning the lens over in his hand before he also licked it, making a sour face.
"Fireballs?"
"Or summoned creatures," Jeb said. "I was thinking giant worm scarabs."
"You guys are creeping me out,"
Amanda said, watching them pore over the guts of the slave caller with growing excitement.
"You just wouldn't understand,"
Ron said, rolling his eyes. Amanda raised a brow.
"I mean,"
Ron glanced at Brett. "What are you looking at me for? You're the one that stepped in it." Jessica snorted, her eyes still closed. Jeb tossed the inhibitor into the fire and pocketed the regulator. He could pour mist into it, and the tiny metal box allowed it to thread outward in a fine spool of energy, seemingly good to go for hours. "That'll be handy." "Sleepy time, folks," Jeb said, holding out his hand. Ron reluctantly put the mist lens back in his palm, and Jeb pocketed that, too. The night passed surprisingly peacefully, and Jeb used that as an opportunity to study the firefly lantern. He was able to find where the top of the lantern had been crimped on and gently loosen it, peeling off the top to reveal the delicate guts of the magic item. Inside was a part that could siphon small amounts of mist from whoever was in physical contact, which fed into some kind of capacitor that would tick or discharge every time it reached a certain amount of mist, and several sandwiched pieces of minuscule firefly and control lenses. Tiny pieces of lens no bigger than a grain of rice pressed together tightly. Jeb suspected that if he were to manually try to feed mist through it, he'd burn out the lenses immediately. His voltage was far too high. Hence the tiny siphon and capacitor. It really was a good way of maximizing cost to effectiveness. Seeing as all three lens sandwiches could probably fit on the tip of his finger, they must have been relatively inexpensive. The most important thing was that the design gave Jeb a good idea on how to create a system that could create controllable monsters. Controllable anything, really. Let's see. We're limited by the smallest part, which would be the very small control lens, about the size of a quarter. I could do giant scarabs, giant worms. To be on the safe side, he wouldn't make anything bigger than a horse. No, I don't think they'll be useful, even at that size. There was no guarantee the creatures would be robust enough to assist them in any meaningful way. In a system where attributes like body were a factor, couldn't people and monsters with lots of it swing way above their weight class? How was he supposed to know how much body a created creature had, anyway? Jeb doubted it would be very high from the get-go, so even if he made death worms the size of buses, if they got torn through like tissue paper, he'd be at a loss. If not summons, then what? Jeb immediately thought of slapping the control lens together with the pure flame lens and making the equivalent of a lightsaber. As drool-worthy as that was, it would be little more than a fancy toy. Would a flame sword be cool? Yes. Did they need a flame sword? No. Did they need an auto-magic smelter/shaper? Well, probably not, but it had more utility than a flame sword. Jeb's idea was to take the pure flame lens and pair it with the control lens, along with the small regulator riding shotgun, with a control lens salvaged from the lantern affixed to the output on the regulator. That should give me what I want. But I should test it before I get too far into this. Jeb pried one of the 5 sandwiches of lenses out of the lantern, then peeled them apart using the edge of the blade. Once he had the minuscule lens separated, he gently attached it to the front of the pinhole where the little iron box released mist. Once that was done, he filled it with mist and then disconnected himself from it. Sure enough, Jeb was able to control the small amount of mist winding out of the regulator. He used the thread of mist to pick up progressively larger objects until the rice grain control lens snapped around 5 pounds, leaving the regulator spilling uncontrolled mist into the atmosphere. Okay, we're gonna have to make the big control lens pull double duty. Jeb compared the size of his pure flame lens to the other with a frown. With careful cutting, I might be able to get 4 very small lenses out of this one. Just small enough to nestle beside the regulator. All right, let's try this. Jeb hardened a razor-sharp piece of toothed air and dragged it across the side of the lens, cutting it hot dog style. He made sure to save the dust. Who knew what you could do with lens dust? Once he cut it long ways, he cut it down the center and got 4 roughly equal parts. Jeb pulled out his file and got to work. The hours went by as Jeb whittled, first working on the lens, then fitting it in beside the regulator, making sure each of them had a unique section of the control lens, and that they wouldn't overlap with each other. Then he went about making a handle for it, carved out of a nearby branch. Let's see. Mist goes in here. Then it gets channeled up and hits the splitter here. He was still going over the details when the sun came up, revealing the zombie horde surrounding them in all its dreadful glory. Jeb didn't have the mind to pay attention to that unimportant fact, though. He was on a roll. Oh, Jeb, you're still awake? Amanda said, wiping sand out of her eyes. He paused and glanced at the sun rising above the forest. Yes. Jeb glanced over and spotted Ron passed out under the nearby tree, Jessica sitting on the log above him, surveying the surroundings with a watchful eye.
You looked like you were having fun, Jessica said with a shrug.
What's it do?
Brett asked, glancing at the piece of wood in his hand while making breakfast. It looks something like a shitty bike handle with little lumps coming off the side where the regulator and the pure flame lens met. I guess this is my Hello World mistcrafting proof of concept, Jeb said, turning it this way and that. If I'm right, it should serve as a furnace to melt and shape steel.
But why?
Because I couldn't think of anything better, Jeb grumbled.
What if you're wrong? Jessica asked.
I suppose it'll explode or drip molten steel all over my hands.
The 3 conscious members of the party leaned away from Jeb's invention.
I'm pretty sure it won't.
Jeb turned it over in his hands 6 times, reviewing every aspect of the lumpy handle. I'll probably want to add a drip guard.
Let's see what this thing can do,
Jeb said, picking up a warped piece of the broken metal collar. He split his siphoned mist into 2 tiny threads, channeling 1 into the broken collar, while the other he fed into the handle of his invention.
Whoosh!
In the brief moment between the explosive activation of the smelter and Jeb's instinctive wall of force around it, Jeb lost a week's worth of beard and his eyebrows. At the end of Jeb's outstretched arm, a pillar of blue flame was manifesting 4 inches above the lens and reaching a length of 10 feet into the sky. The thread of telekinetic mist leaking out of the regulator he used to create an enclosure, somewhat diminishing the searing heat. If it wasn't just a jet of flame, that would be good. Maybe I can make a lid that... In front of Jeb's eyes, the snake of blue flame squashed itself down until it was only a few feet tall. That's right, the control ends. Does that mean... He willed the flame to form a tight coil. The brilliant blue flames responded instantly. Chuckling, Jeb tossed the wrecked steel collar into the enclosure, holding it there with his mist. The length of flame coiled around the steel like a living thing, like a brilliant blue snake strangling its prey. In seconds, the steel turned dark, then cherry red, then white hot. Then it began to spark as it melted, the only thing holding it in place being his mist.
You want a souvenir? Jeb asked, glancing at Jessica.
Pass.
Here goes nothing,
Jeb said with a grimace, getting ready to pull his hand out from under the molten steel. He dropped his mist. The regulator kept working, releasing his mist as a thin strand that could last for hours. The telekinetic box above his hand was still there. The piece of molten steel lost its shape and dropped to the bottom of the box, causing him to flinch. 4 inches above his hand, the white-hot piece of liquid metal rested on nothing, only projecting a fraction of its heat. He split 2 new strands and created 2 hands of pure force. Hands were something familiar to Jeb, manipulating the rapidly cooling steel into a shape more suited to his purposes.
Holy shit! I love it!
Ron stood in front of Jeb's creation, practically drooling. Jeb ignored him. He was more focused on what he wanted to use the little bit of steel for. Ron pointed a dramatic finger at Jeb's creation.
I hereby officially name that the Blue Serpent Furnace.
Ron,
Jeb said, glancing up at the necromancer with exasperation.
Name accepted. Blue Serpent Furnace. Rare. The first creation by the human mystic trapsmith Jebediah Trapper. This novel multi-tool was created using rare and valuable lenses. It is most effective in the hands of wizards with the telekinetic core or subcore. The Blue Serpent Furnace uses telekinetic force to create any tool imaginable, as well as effectively harnesses the heat of the pure flame lens for smithing, cooking, smelting, or combat purposes. The pure flame resembles a serpent when in use, giving the item its name. You have created the highest rarity unique magic item of your species. Innovator accolade granted. Innovator. This accolade grants a passive bonus to the preservation and reclamation of materials that would otherwise be wasted in the user's creations. This bonus only applies to the user's creations. It is not a bonus to salvaging others. If at first you don't succeed, try again. Jeb read and reread the notification.
Damn it, Ron, you're lucky you picked a decent name, or else I'd have to thump you, Jeb said.
Please,
Ron said, crossing his arms.
I've read enough sense yet to name an artifact or two.
No really helping your case there, Ron,
Brett said. Jessica gave a faint smile from where she perched on the log. After a couple minutes of fiddling around with the molten steel, Jeb started to get the hang of it, bending and stretching the goopy liquid steel into the rough shape he was imagining, until he realized there was a much simpler method of getting what he wanted, one that people had been using for millennia.
How did he do it?
He cheated. By solidifying some air into the exact shape of the mold he wanted and reheating the steel, he was able to inject the white-hot liquid into the exact shape he wanted. None of this fumbling around. He'd save that for when he wanted to try for something layered or otherwise unique. In a matter of minutes, the little hollow cylinder cooled, eventually becoming cool enough to handle by hand.
What,
Ron asked, frowning at the piece of steel.
What is this supposed to be?
A better handle,
Jeb said, pulling the lenses and the regulator out and slotting them into the exact place they needed to be before latching the simple hinge back down over it and closing it with a tiny screw. Then he cut a slice of wood and used that to top the handle. Over time, the wood would char, acting as a halfway decent buffer between the heat of the furnace and the incredibly heat-conductive handle. That was the biggest downside of using a steel handle, but the upside was that the lenses were now safely ensconced in 1/4 inch of solid steel. They weren't going to get broken without some serious effort behind it. On the other hand, he glanced over at Ron's death knight. There were people who could probably snap it like a twig. Now that he was done with his project, Jeb was incredibly tired. Every fiber of his being wanted to drag him down into the nice soft dirt for a nap. But first, they needed to get distance.
You can sleep on the palanquin,
Ron said, as if reading Jeb's mind. The necromancer was pointing over his shoulder at the planks carried by his undead. Jeb blinked, his eyes gummy. I can go one more day, he said, taking three deep breaths, dispelling the fatigue with a rapid intake of oxygen to boost his heart rate. Old tricks coming in handy. They moved. Over the course of the day, they cut their way through the forest, heading west away from the enormous tortoise that was literally spewing monsters into the environment, slowly turning its head their direction. The tortoise was turning into the forest. Hours could pass, and you could barely tell it had shifted at all. But the colossal tortoise was shifting, putting one leg in front of the other, entering the forest. Looking for them. Phase two sucks. They were halfway across the forest, moving at the fastest pace they could with all the baggage. As with so many things, they were only as fast as their slowest member. Max speed was such. 1. Jeb at about 120 miles per hour through telekinetic flight. 2. Jessica pulling 100 miles per hour by dicking with her mass. She could go much faster in short bursts, but they were tiresome. 3. Amanda at a highway 55 miles per hour. 4. Brett at a respectable 50 miles per hour. 5. Ron at an inhuman 35 miles per hour. 6. Ron's zombies at about 25 miles per hour. They weren't about to abandon their meat shields. Even if Jeb picked himself and Ron up and they abandoned their rotting flesh bags, they'd be forced to abandon all of their luggage, including the lion's share of their food, and both Ron and the Korvar couple's trade goods. Now, Jeb wasn't big on material wealth, never had been. But this was one of those months where the difference between dying and not dying might depend on putting that enchanted shield Amanda won lying down into the right person's hands. No, they needed more speed. They needed to raise the lowest person speed. Best way to do that was by taking people off the list. Jeb glanced at Ron's palanquin. Idea. Jeb's carrying capacity was in the tons and growing. He could easily carry all the luggage plus himself simply by lifting a wide piece of wood or fabric. Flying carpet type deal. But is it worth it? Jeb thought. They were hiding from the torrent of monsters under the safety of the canopy. Carrying everything on a huge platform would only go significantly faster above the snarl of trees. Jeb floated up and peeked out of the green leaves. The sky was littered with patrolling monsters. Nope, Jeb thought, dropping back down into the woods.
Seriously, flying is such a cheat,
Ron said, shaking his head as he and the others relaxed on the palanquin.
If you earn a telekinesis lens, I'll make a flying belt for you if you want. I think I could handle it.
Really?
It might tear you in half, but still.
Jeb shrugged. Ron narrowed his eyes.
I'm still in. Flying is the shit.
Ron's dedication to magic made Jeb crack the first smile of the day. The two of them had totally different viewpoints on magic. Ron was dedicated to the form, what he thought was cool. He wanted to recreate spells directly out of D&D and Diablo. He was dedicated to making his mist fit into that box. Jeb felt more like a mechanic with grease up to his elbows. He didn't really care whether it was pretty or what the magic's name was. His only concern was with performance, what it did, which was probably why he got telekinesis and Ron got necromancy. Amanda was an idealist, so she healed. Jessica? Jeb glanced over at Jess, who was sitting on the palanquin, her eyes closed, feet crossed. He didn't know what Jess had, or how her personality would manifest when it interacted with Mist. Jess seemed cold and practical, wary of men in general, and slow to trust. The question was that the Jess who pressed the impossible button, or was this what the tutorial had made of her? He traced her rounded cheek with his gaze, noting the faint freckles. Jess's eyes popped open, catching Jeb staring at her.
Shit. I did it, she exclaimed.
Did it?
Check this out, she said, making a dramatic pose and tensing. Nothing happened.
Was something supposed to happen? Brett asked.
It's too much mist. Hold on.
She tried a few more things, her frown deepening.
Ah, here.
Jessica held up a finger, and Jeb watched as a thread of pinkish mist swirled out of her hand and condensed around her finger.
It settled into the shape of an armored finger ring with an inch-long talon jutting off of it.
Cool. If that's the first thing she can make right out of the gate, then she should be able to armor her entire body in no time. There's even the possibility she might be able to make more than armor, possibly weapons or enchanted gear. It's a good fit for her. She probably hasn't even started taking in mist seriously yet, so we can expect a lot of improvement.
That's hilarious, Ron said. It's like a magical girl transformation. What are you going to do with finger armor?
Jess jabbed him with the razor-sharp talon, punching through a joint in his armor.
I stand corrected,
Ron whispered, clutching his bleeding side.
Jess,
Amanda admonished, healing Ron with a tap on his side.
There was no need to go that far.
He stands corrected, Jessica said, brows raised.
It's a good power, Jeb said.
I can already think of a couple ways you can use it. Now you just gotta draw in mist and burn it.
It's not a star, Jessica said.
What is it? Jess actually blushed.
It's a magical wardrobe. I fill it with mist folded into bolts of cloth. The more I add, the bigger the wardrobe gets. But some of them spill out because it's not a one-to-one ratio. I use the ones that spilled out to make clothes.
So it's functionally similar to mine. Where did you get the idea? Jeb asked.
Amanda was saying we would make me some new armor if we had to,
she said, motioning to herself.
I remembered I used to watch anime when I was younger, and there was a girl who could summon armor and weapons. I thought she was badass. When I tried making a core with that in mind, it clicked.
Ron put a hand on her shoulder.
Everyone thinks Urza Scarlet is badass.
He nodded sagely. Jeb frowned.
Who?
Brett raised a hand.
I'm starting to feel left out here, he said.
Jeb sat down with Brett and explained mist and his experience with it. Even Amanda was able to make some improvements in how she used her mist. Amanda had, until this point, dipped directly into her well of life rather than use the stuff that sloshed over the edge, stunting the growth of her powers. Brett didn't currently have any mist, but he was eager to get some. That meant levels and accolades. Are there any more bosses left in the forest? There's gotta be. If not the forest, then the lands beyond. Jeb saw a familiar lump in the ground to the south. Hold up. Jeb jumped off the palanquin and zoomed forward, crossing the distance to the barrow in moments. We meet again, Scarab Dungeon. Jeb distinctly recalled promising to pay the dungeon a visit again when he was strong enough to tear the guts of the dungeon out of the stone. Well, he was strong enough now. He walked into the single hall and hopped over the beam, then stood under the hollowed-out ceiling where he'd stolen the lens. He reached up into the stone and yanked. There was a crack, and the entire dungeon rumbled.
A moment later, the center of the ceiling fell loose, slamming down onto the earth in front of him with a cacophonous explosion.
When the dust cleared, he was faced with a massive wedge of stone.
Are you okay?
Amanda called from the entrance.
Fine. That made a lot of noise, Brett said. Whatever you're doing, make it quick. I don't want this to be our last stand.
Jeb crouched down in front of the wedge and ran his gaze along the rough stone. There. A silvery dot that had no place in the stone. When he looked closer, he could see a faint difference in the quality of the stone on either side. A seam. He grabbed either side of the seam telekinetically and wrenched the stone apart. With a crack, the stone split, revealing more of the guts of the scarab trap. It was a goddamn gold mine. There was a little tube that looked something like a fuse,
except it seemed to have a blue sphere at one end and a prism in the center. The other end had a tiny hole. Mist seemed to be sucked into the hole as a vapor. Then, when it hit the prism, it was changed into a light wave and ejected out through the glass sides, creating a steady rainbow glow radiating from it. Very small mist generator. Uncommon. Found in enchanted objects that need to perform a discrete external effect without input from the user. The mist generator passively draws in mist and converts it to a usable state for lenses. Due to the cost inherent in creating them, they are seldom found outside military and industrial applications.
Mine. Jeb shoved the finger-length glass tube in his pocket, then scavenged as much of the rest of the trap as he possibly could. He found a mist capacitor that made the one in his lantern look like baby time, along with a little snarl of Magitek that was responsible for making the capacitor click 10 times. He grabbed that and several feet of what looked suspiciously like fiber optics, stuffed them all into his bag, and hustled out. The beam in the center of the hall was dark, not having a constant supply of mist delivered to it. I wish I had time to steal the trigger mechanism, too, but Britt's right. We can't afford to dick around here too long. Jeb hurried out, and the train of humans and zombies got back underway. Not a moment too soon, because a few minutes later, they heard the sound of stone being ripped to shreds by claws behind them. Imagine what a living chainsaw would sound like, and you've got an idea. It wasn't long after that they started running into trouble. The monsters started nipping at their heels. Whenever a creature caught up with them, Rum would have some of his zombies hold it in place while they kept going. Stopping to fight the creatures would get them bogged down faster than you could say it. They were losing 4 or 5 zombies here and there, but they managed to put pursuit behind them after a while. They were passing north of the clearing Jeb had woken up in when a fluttering fairy slammed into the side of Jeb's head like a bird against a windshield. Thump! Jeb felt tiny hands grab onto his ears as Smartass dominated his field of vision, hovering barely an inch away from his nose.
Eminem Lord, you have to help us! Giant monsters are eating all our babies!
Desperation and panic were carved on the little creature's face. He didn't really have any choice but to see it. Jeb didn't have to help them, but he sure as shit owed the fluttering idiots a lot more than the shoeful of M&Ms he'd given them. Keep going west, Jeb said, rising into the air. I'll catch up. Chapter 14. Gigantism is in the eye of the beholder.
This way!
Smartass shouted, streaking off into the distance. Jeb put a windshield in front of him and blasted through the woods, swerving around massive trees like a certain land speeder in a popular film. The woods stretched out around him as he put on speed, looking almost like a hallway as he whipped through the woods.
The hallway outside the room.
The thought began burrowing its way in through the top of his consciousness. The canopy above him began to seem jagged and ominous. His nerves felt like they'd been dipped in ice.
No time for that bullshit. Baby fairies. If I'm dead, I'm dead, goddammit.
Jeb thrust the dark thoughts aside with a shout and put on more speed, his thumb unconsciously tracing the scar on his hand. He reached the former safe zone in less than a minute, coming to a hard stop in the middle of the clearing, the wind swirling to catch up with him.
What he saw was less than impressive.
Shoo! Shoo!
The fairies were swarming around the upper branches of their oak tree, their fluttering wings nearly preventing him from seeing the squirrels being harassed from branch to branch by angry fairies, their cheeks stuffed with nuts. To be fair, the squirrels were bigger than the fairies, but Jeb had been expecting more from the word giant. Smartass, your young don't grow inside acorns, do they? Jeb asked.
No, why would they do that?
Smartass said, glancing at him sideways, brow raised.
Those acorns are the pride and joy of our tribe. We use them to make tools, clothes, poop bombs, and so on. Their tough shells and delicious insides are absolutely essential for every convenience of the modern fairy.
Jeb's eyes narrowed as he watched the fairy's gaze drift away, expressing guilty. You invested all your money in the acorn business, didn't you?
Please,
Smartass said, grabbing him by the ear and kneeling on his shoulder.
They're eating all of my stock. If you don't help me, I'm ruined.
Jeb was tempted to help, except for the fact that once he did, he would be opening the door to an ocean of stupid requests. "Maybe next time you'll diversify," Jeb said, keeping his heart as ice cold as possible while his one-time apprentice bawled his eyes out.
Wait a minute. They have telekinesis too. From what he could remember, they could at least move a rough shovelful of dirt.
"Can't you use magic?" Jeb asked.
"No, you don't understand," Smartass said. "These furry destroyers are far too perceptive and fast for our magic to catch them. You're the only one powerful enough. Please, catch them with your gigantic sausage fingers, or grab them with your super-duper magic."
"Listen," Jeb said, gently brushing Smartass off his shoulder. "It's not safe for me to be here, so I'm going to catch up with the rest of my group. If there's a life-or-death emergency, don't hesitate to call." Smartass had opened his mouth to respond when a girl's scream tore through the clearing. Jeb whipped his head around and spotted Casey, the pregnant teen, stumble out of the woods, cradling her stomach as she waddled at top speed. He didn't know if it was because she was pregnant or because she hadn't gotten any levels, but it wasn't very fast. A barbed spine whipped out of the woods and embedded in the young girl's shoulder, whirling her around and sending her toppling to the ground. She desperately caught herself on her hands a moment before she landed on her stomach, a scene that nearly made Jeb bite a hole in his pants. Every human instinct in his body was telling him this: pregnant women get a free pass. Smartass's jaw dropped as Jeb lunged forward to help Casey. "I didn't make the rules for humans," Jeb thought as his body picked itself up and flew forward at max speed, arriving beside the girl with the oversized belly. Jeb didn't have time to dick around. He didn't know what the situation was or whether or not the spine was poisoned. He knelt down beside the black-haired teen and made a fist around the inch-wide spine, perforating her shoulder, brutally yanking it out with a spray of blood before she could realize what he was doing. Like ripping off a band-aid. Jeb siphoned out a huge gob of mist and channeled it through his cane, keeping his eyes on the forest. The cane created a radius of healing energy that seemed to soak into Jeb's bones. Naturally, the expectant mother was in the area. Casey's scream ended in a question as her shoulder patched itself up. The undergrowth shook. Jeb held his right hand out, splayed, as he grabbed Casey's arm with the other. The mystic trigger deployed the shield in front of his hand moments before three more spines, almost the size of his wrist, whistled out of the woods, ricocheting off the plane of force.
"Are you okay?" Jeb asked, creating some mind bullets.
Casey half-sobbed, her goth mascara running down her cheeks as she stumbled. Did she have a case of makeup on her? I'll take that as a yes, Jeb thought, pulling her back as three creatures leaped out of the woods. They looked half-tiger, half-porcupine, half-lizard. 150% asshole. They snarled in a way that would almost be cute if they weren't obviously about to eat people.
"Yeah,"
they chirruped, leaping toward the two of them.
"Pardon," Jeb said, picking Casey up, causing the girl to yelp as he stumped backwards, a risky proposition with a peg leg.
The three monsters lunged toward them. The first one smashed its nose on the invisible shield hanging in midair. The other two dodged around the paralyzed monster with cat-like reflexes angling for the two of them. Jeb sent his mind bullets toward the closer one, sending a spike of hardened air through the creature's forehead and scrambling its brain. He shifted his arm under Casey's legs and aimed his finger at the third one, leaping at them, paws wide.
"Juggernaut!"
Jeb gave the command of one of his full auto triggers. 100 spikes of telekinetic force shot out of the space in front of his finger in the span of 4 seconds, tearing the leaping monster to shreds. Jeb clomped backwards farther as he struggled to put more distance between him and the last creature, the one stunned by the plane of force. He was preparing to skewer it from the side with his mind bullets when it staggered back from the shield and gave a bloody howl that sank into his skin and froze his spine. "Leaky cum-guzzling son of a bitch!" Jeb directed the bullets around the shield and through the creature's skull, scrambling its brains a bit out of spite.
"All right, we gotta get out of here before—"
The little goth teen let out a strangled cry and curled around her stomach, her expression showing extreme pain.
What's going on? Did you get hit?
Casey didn't say anything for roughly half a minute, simply gritting her teeth and sweating. A moment later, she caught her breath, panting.
My stomach's been cramping up so hard, I think I'm gonna break. Something's wrong with my baby.
Contractions? Any man in his 40s, whether they want to or not, whether it be from romantic comedies or experience with their sister, in-law, or wife, has almost a bit of pregnancy knowledge.
When was the last one?
He asked. From his vague knowledge, they started hours and hours apart and gradually grew closer together until it was baby time. If they were lucky, the last one was an hour ago and he'd be able to get her to...
A few minutes.
She gasped, her eyes tearing. Jeb bit back a torrent of curses. She's on the home stretch.
You need to take off your skinny pants. Baby's coming, Jeb said, clumping over to the oak tree and setting her down.
What?
You didn't know?
Jeb asked, frowning. Casey shook her head, causing Jeb's ire to flare up. Every single prospective parent nowadays would do some kind of research about the process, either from curiosity or fear.
You had 9 months and the internet. How could you not know?
Jeb cut his tirade short, seeing the teen's fearful eyes gazing up at him, watery with tears.
Everybody's got their own circumstances. Remind me to find her parents and kick the shit out of them.
I didn't know, I swear.
She said, her voice wavering, a hint of a southern accent peeking through.
Okay, there's nothing to be concerned about.
Jeb said soothingly, doing his best to calm her down.
I've done this a bunch of times before.
Lie. I did an at-home birth with my wife for both of our kids. Jeb had never been married.
And helped with a few overseas.
Also untrue.
I know what I'm doing,
Jeb said, giving her a grin and a thumbs up.
Complete and utter bullshit.
She looked like she felt better, though, and that was what Jeb was going for. A relaxed pregnant woman was better than a terrified pregnant woman, all other factors being equal. He couldn't change the fact that he was unqualified, only how Casey felt about it.
All right, let's get those pants off. Junior's not going to be able to get through denim.
When he saw Casey struggling to get her hands over her own distended belly, he took the initiative and began unbuttoning her pants.
Hi, my name's Jebediah. Most people call me Jeb. I've got a strict rule of being on a first-name basis with a woman before taking her pants off, he said, hoisting her hips up and yanking the tight denim down, undies and all.
Casey,
she gasped.
Casey, nice to meet you.
Jebediah turned to the side where Smartass and a dozen other fairies were hovering curiously.
You guys have been drafted.
What?
Smartass asked.
Your M&M Lord commands it. Fetch me water and towels.
The fairy scattered. He turned back to Casey. The black-haired goth teen with the running mascara was watching him with a frightened expression.
Fairies, Jeb said by way of explanation. By the way, what's your body at? This is relevant to your pregnancy.
13,
she said moments before another contraction hit, causing her to groan and clench her jaw.
Excellent. 13 is well into superhuman territory, so as long as she doesn't crush her baby's skull, she should be relatively safe, being significantly tougher than a normal mom.
Jeb had heard plenty of stories about women bleeding out, and basically all the way up until the last 100 years, birth had been a crapshoot, where mothers dropped like flies. And even if her natural resilience failed, there was the Vivicant cane. Brett had refilled it for him, and he'd used one for the spike in her shoulder, leaving him with 3 uses. If 3 uses of magical healing couldn't compensate for a lack of high-tech facility, Jeb would eat his hat.
I guess now I've got a... check the dilation?
Peering into a gaping bloody pussy wasn't Jeb's idea of a good time, but you did what you had to do.
About 3 inches. Jeb thought to himself.
He was pretty sure the number for a baby head that he heard thrown around was 10 centimeters.
Friggin' metric system.
He did some quick conversion. About 4 inches.
Looks like we're most of the way there. Crash. Jeb's head swiveled, and he took in a humongous scaled monster with sharp teeth and a ravenous appetite that had just landed in the clearing, most likely attracted by the spiny bastard's howls. It stood 15 feet high at the shoulder, absolutely massive and big enough to swallow either of them in a single bite. It had a flat head covered in thick, sturdy scales and a dumb look in its eye. Casey let out a frightened whimper.
"Relax," Jeb said. "I had to fight off monsters when my wife was delivering too. This is totally normal."
Jeb didn't know if she caught the joke or if it revealed his bullshit. Too late to worry about it now.
"Smartass,"
Jeb said, watching the newcomer scan the area and lock onto them.
"Yes, sir, Eminem Lord."
Watch her dilation. When you see the baby's head, gently pull it out. If she starts bleeding out or dying at any point, channel all your mist through the cane, he said, dropping the cane down beside Casey.
"Yes, sir, Eminem Lord,"
Smartass said, saluting him before flying down between Casey's legs. A moment later, a shrill voice began screaming.
"Oh, gods, it's hideous. It's like the gates of Tartarus opening up in front of me. A body can't hold that much blood."
Smartass immediately panicked and hit the panic button. Jeb felt a cool rush of healing magic wash over him.
"Did you just—"
Jeb was interrupted as the creature began charging. Jeb siphoned out two threads. One he used to lift himself off the ground, the other he wrapped around the creature's head, intending to snap its neck. Jeb failed. The monster was ridiculously strong, and its sheer mass prevented him from completely stopping its charge toward Casey. Then change its course. Jeb flew to the left and dragged the creature's head to the left as well, causing it to miss the oak tree by a few feet, spraying dirt from its scrabbling claws on Casey and Smartass. It charged another 100 feet before it seemed to realize it had missed its target, glancing over its shoulder at the offending oak tree with ire.
"No, you look at me!"